The Saints sign a valuable commodity to hopefully gain them a step up in their pursuit of a Super Bowl. LSU baseball more concerned about pitching, hitting, both as they get ready for a midweek game followed by a huge, huge test on the road. LSU versus Michigan State. Talk more about the Sweet 16 matchup, and the astronaut makes a rare, rare appearance. We'll tell you all about him and more today, Tuesday, March 26th, 2019.
On right in the backcourt, pressure, gets by the press, lobs to the rim for Caboclo, two-handed jam. Thunder put the press on, Wright just darted right past it, into the front court in a perfect alley-oop feed. DeLon Wright's 13th assist, that matches his career high, and a 108-98 Grizzly lead.
Now they go inside. Here, baseline shot is good by Devin Booker. Right, he has now, 59.
Utah is trying to stop him. They're running three guys at him.
Ingles strips it away from Ayton. Picked up by Favors. Out to Joe, left and hammer. Oh, he came from down under to go up high.
And a good afternoon, and welcome. How are you, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, all throughout Acadiana on 103.7 The Game and around the world on 103.7thegame.com. Great to be with you. What a Chamber of Commerce Tuesday it is in Acadiana. What a beautiful day, and it's great to be with you. Thanks so much for joining us as we come to you each and every day from 2 to 4 p.m. Saints get their tight end. And the NFL has a proposal in front of them. And, you know, better, I guess it is late, but better than never. The NFL's competition committee has introduced a new proposal for expanding replay that would allow some non-calls to be reviewed. This is in response to a nearly three-hour meeting yesterday in which all 32 coaches expressed support for finding a way to correct clear and obvious officiating mistakes, no matter how they happen. So unlike a pair of proposals that were submitted last week, the new rule would have addressed the controversial failure of the officials to call pass interference in the fourth quarter of the Rams' three-point win over the Saints in the NFC Championship game. It's late, but it's better than never. Sean Payton arrived at the league's annual media breakfast more than 15 minutes early today to continue his advocacy for replay expansion. People would say to me, stop, but I'm not complaining at all. It's just trying to think forward here. It's what deductible are you comfortable with? We just got hit with this event. I don't think it was good for anyone. Coaches met yesterday for 2.5 hours. It's the best meeting I've been a part of in my 13 years. It's just obvious. It was a 32-0 vote, Tampa Bay Buck coach Bruce Arians said. Hopefully, our voice will be heard. Well, it makes sense, doesn't it? It certainly does. The owners' meetings, coaches' meetings taking place in Phoenix, and hopefully this will happen. Sean Payton took it a step further, saying that owners will one day arrive at a similar conclusion. He said it may not be this weekend, not today, but we're going to have a point where this eighth official up is going to allow this game to flow. It's going to allow it to flow, and he's going to buzz that buzzer when he feels a certain level of a mistake has been made, and that's going to happen. That eye in the sky. I think the officials will like it, coaches will like it, players will like it, everybody will like it. The owners, well, they're going to have to, I think it's going to have to agree. Plain and simple. So, meetings taking place. We'll talk with Luke Johnson later on this morning to talk about the new tight end in town. Saints wanted to get better on the defensive line, better on the offensive line, and they needed a tight end. They've gotten all three of those, in their opinion, and now they can go for the best player available when the draft comes. Meanwhile, the SEC is quite happy. So far in the NCAA tournament, they've collected $28.8 million to date. That means each team gets $2.06 million. It all goes into a pot and gets distributed at the annual spring meetings. There are four teams left in the Sweet 16, Kentucky, Tennessee, Auburn, and, of course, LSU. The most value they could get from here on out would be another $41.4 million, depending. If you win, you advance, you play another game, that's more money in the SEC coffers. So good luck to the SEC. Good luck. LSU back on the practice court today before they leave Wednesday to head to D.C. LSU baseball on the home front tonight. They'll take on McNeese State. Mikhail Hilliard will be on the mound. It'll be a pitching convention because LSU has to get on a bus early tomorrow and head to Starkville, Mississippi for a Thursday, Friday, Saturday matchup against the hottest team in the SEC. Without question, without doubt, Brody Miller will join us in this hour to talk about this LSU baseball team who got two really, really outstanding quality starts from Zach Hess and Cole Henry, the freshman. But the bats were non-existent. They finally got some hitting in the finale, the rubber match, but came up a little bit short. So we'll talk with Brody Miller about that. Hour number two, really, really looking forward to it. Always start off the hour with hot topics. Clint Domain, our producer, will throw some things at me. We'll have a discussion about that. And then he very rarely, if ever, makes a television or a radio appearance. But let me just tell you, back in the day, from about 1977 to 1979, three basketball seasons, there wasn't a more talented player in America than LSU's Dwayne Scales. He was the astronaut. He was 6'9". He could shoot from 25 or 30 feet effortlessly. He could jump through the roof. You think Marlon Taylor has hops? You ain't seen nothing yet. You got to see the... We gave him the nickname the astronaut because he took off to space. At 6'9", he was ridiculous. Ridiculous. He was the most valuable player of the SEC tournament, the only one that LSU's ever won, when I think he got 33 against Kentucky in the championship game. He was a rare talent, a rare talent. But he had troubles on the court and off the court, was suspended by Dale Brown prior to the NCAA tournament in 1979. We won the first game against Appalachian State in Bloomington, Indiana, where Indiana University plays. Then we went to Market Square Arena, took on Michigan State. And without him, it was a different scenario. No question. We were without Rudy Macklin, who was injured, Dwayne Scales, suspended. We had a really good basketball team, but we ran up against Magic Johnson and the Michigan State Spartans, and they got the better of us on that day. I would have loved to have played that game with those two on the court. I'm not saying we'd win, but I guarantee it'd been a heck of a lot closer, and it'd have been a heck of a lot of a battle. It really would. Really looking forward to talking with Dwayne Scales. I haven't talked to Dwayne Scales since he left LSU. He left after his junior year to go to the NBA, drafted in the second round by the New York Knicks. He made a mistake, should have stayed one more season, in my humble opinion. I'll ask him about it in hour number two. So really looking forward to that. So with all that being said, Hooters on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway is back. It's open. It's better than ever. And it's a great place to go to watch NCAA tournament games. It's a great place to go watch the LSU baseball game tonight. It's new. It's improved. But it's still got the great food. Still got the Hooters girls. 15 wings and a big old pitcher of domestic brew for $15 each and every day. Bring your team in their uniforms. Get some free wings. Compliments of Hooters, because Hooters just makes you happy. Good day for the Saints. We'll recap it next with our good buddy Luke Johnson. NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune. Gorgeous day. Thanks so much for being with us. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station. 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Come on back.
The hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 1037 The Game.
Hey, welcome back. Let's spend 10 good minutes with our friend Luke Johnson, NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune. Owners meetings going on in Phoenix. The Saints very, very busy. They addressed a pressing need as finally it's been announced that tight end Jared Cook is a New Orleans Saint. Luke, what took so long on that? That man, it seems like we've been sitting on that one for a week.
Yeah, it has been just about a week. I think he made his visit to Saints not last Thursday, but the Thursday before. We've all been kind of expecting this to happen any time now. Actually, I think I wrote a story like 4 days ago that I ended up publishing this morning. I'm not exactly sure what the hangup was. You know, I think they had an agreement in place, but they just needed to get some stuff ironed out with it. I was calling me surprised this morning when Sean Payton spoke to the reporters in Phoenix. And he's like, we're excited to have him. We're glad he's in the building. I was like, oh, of course, that's how this ends up getting announced. with Sean Payton saying, oh, yeah, it's done. You know, so, to be totally honest here, I think it's a great move for the Saints. Okay. I think he's going to add an element to that offense that was missing last year.
Okay, so is he the best catching tight end that the Saints have had since Jimmy Graham departed to Seattle?
I think so. Obviously we got to see how he fits into this offense, but he's a big guy who can really move. He's a great athlete. I think football fans will probably remember the catch he made while he's with the Packers against the Cowboys in the playoffs a couple years ago. A really just unbelievable sideline tiptoe catch off an unbelievable throw from Aaron Rodgers. And we haven't seen a guy who's kind of capable of doing that around here for a while. Like I said, you got to see how he fits in. I think people were excited when they signed Kobe Fleener a couple years ago, and that obviously didn't work out. So you got to hope that he fits in a little bit. They try to identify guys who fit well in what they try to do, and they think Jared Cook is that guy, and certainly his production backs that up. Like anything with the free agent signing, it's a wait and see thing. Turn out to be a great signing, and it might turn out to be a disappointment.
Earlier this offseason, Sean Payton listed tight end, check, interior offensive and defensive line as areas of need. Check, check, right? They got their backup quarterback in Teddy Bridgewater. They lost out on Mark Ingram, but they got a running back from Minnesota in his place. So on paper, it looks like they have filled their needs in free agency. What does that mean for this team when the draft comes around?
I think it means that if they see a player they really like, regardless of the position, they can pick them, or they can package picks to move up and pick somebody. I think they are exactly where they want to be heading into the draft because – yeah, they've filled these gaps they had in their roster. Now they still have some areas where you'd like to see them add a little bit more. I still think they need some more depth on the interior defensive line, even after signing Malcolm Brown and Mario Edwards. We could still see them kind of gravitate toward that with that that first pick that they have in the second round. But you know, I think this puts them into a position where they can go get somebody they really like, regardless of what position that player plays.
Are they done with free agency, or is there something else out there looming, in your opinion?
Shoot, I would think they'd be done.
Yeah,
they gotta make sure they have enough money to sign the draft picks. You know, even though they only have one pick in the first four rounds, they still have six picks in this draft. And you know, you can bet they're going to be active pursuing guys who are undrafted free agents. But you know, those guys aren't going to eat up significant numbers. But I'd be surprised if we see them very much more active in the free agent waters than they are right now.
Luke Johnson, NOLA.com, the Times Pick. You. All right, Phoenix. The coaches unanimously support finding a way to correct clear and obvious officiating mistakes, no matter how they happen. 32 zip, all in favor. Why are the owners not in favor of that, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think it's all optics. It's not wanting to interrupt the flow of the game. And I think with any sport, you know, football, baseball, basketball, whatever. I think it's obvious that stopping the game to go look at a play a bunch, interrupts the flow of the game. I think there's some hesitation to expand replay, in a sense that it might affect the flow. But you know, Sean Payton said today, if I'm able to challenge a broader spectrum of plays, then I'm going to be smart about how I use my challenges. I'm not going to just use them on, challenging like a spot on a second down play or something like that early in the game when you know that, that could come in really handy for a play like the one that occurred at the end of the NFC Championship game. I think that's the hump they're trying to get over right now is how this might affect the pace and the speed of the game, which is one of the things that makes the NFL popular. It's one of the things that makes NBA popular, and it's one of the things that has kind of killed Major League Baseball is the pace. So, I think they're cognizant of that, but I think there's a way to work around it and still make sure that you are getting the right outcome as many times as possible.
Sean Payton was also very high on fantasy football, right? He thinks it's good for the league. He gets it. He understands what the pulse of the people are all about.
Yeah, I think so. And but Sean Payton also is not a player who has to deal with 30 people texting him after the game. Why'd you drop that pass? You know, you would have won my championship for me. I play fantasy football. I think fantasy football is great. It makes the game more fun. I think there are some. You could criticize the actual act of playing the game and kind of taking away people's interest in true outcomes. You know, I think people are often more concerned about whether their guy caught a pair of touchdown passes with over whoever won the game that day. I think in terms of like driving fan interest in the game, I can't think of a better way to do it. And Sean Payton's obviously smart about that. He knows that people are so interested in that, and that in turn creates interest in the game, and that's going to be what ultimately pays his paycheck and keeps people putting their butts in the seats.
No question about that. Luke Johnson of NOLA.com, the Times Picayune. What else? What else have we learned from Phoenix? Anything else of noteworthiness?
Well, I think you just got to keep track of I think the big thing coming out of Phoenix this week are obviously the rule changes. Some of them were vetoed outright. I think the proposal might have been by the Broncos that kind of mirrors the AAF rule, where instead of an onside kick, you can go for like a 4th and 12 from your own 25 or 35 or something like that. I think that was vetoed. a couple other ones were, but some of these ones are going to be approved. Some of them are going to be tabled until May. And I think it's something that we've got to keep an eye on throughout the year because these are things that could have a big impact on the way games are played next year.
4th and 12, a lot easier to do to convert than an onside kick, I would think, right?
Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
I can't remember the last time I saw a successful onside kick. Yeah, you see them every now and then in these big situations when guys are. Yeah, dealing with the pressure of trying to haul a ball in. You know, we saw it in the Saints Super Bowl. We saw it in that game between the Packers and the Seahawks a couple of years ago in the NFC Championship where a Packers player failed to come up with an onside kick and allowed the Seahawks to go to the Super Bowl. I think it would be really interesting if you could do a really risky play and put your offense back out there for one
I'm
big play to keep
it.
Your – Yeah, I would love that, but
I would love it too.
Now is not the time, I guess.
No, I guess not. Owners, slow to change. Luke Johnson, latest on the New Orleans Saints. They got their tight end, Jared Cook, another weapon for Drew Brees, and I love it. Thank you, Luke. Have a good one, buddy.
Hey, my pleasure. Y'all have a good one.
All right, take care. Luke Johnson of NOLA.com, the Times Picayune. LSU Baseball Talk with Brody Miller next.
With a guy whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Hey, we welcome you back. LSU baseball at the box tonight. McNeese State comes to town 6:30. First pitch. You can hear the ball game right here on 103.7 The Game. Pre-game show at 6 as the Tigers get a non-conference game out of the way before they head to Starkville to take on Mississippi State for a Thursday, Friday, Saturday SEC series. Brody Miller, NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune, covers the Tigers. He was in Athens, Georgia. Brody joins us now. Good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing terrific. So I guess the big question, was it just too good of pitching, or are there concerns about LSU and the bats in their hands?
Yeah, I mean, I think the answer is probably somewhere in the middle. I think I probably put a little more lean on, I think this was a dominant Georgia pitching staff. I mean, their ERAs going into the series ranged from 0.81 to, I think, the highest of their three starters was, I think, like 2.7. I mean, it was a genuinely really good pitching staff. Now the thing with that is you don't want to fall too hard into buying that because they're going to face pitchers like this quite often. Maybe they won't face 3-1 weekend like this, but you can't, it's the SEC. You're going to face top arms almost every weekend. They certainly will again this weekend against Mississippi State. But anyway, there definitely are concerns with the lineup, and Molinari doesn't deny that. I mean, I think the main thing is, that top half of the lineup, a lot of those lefties, they've been productive. You can trust Josh Smith. You can trust Cabrera. You can trust Chris Reed. And, DePlantis has kind of slipped a little. But in the grand scheme of things, of course, you can trust Antoine DePlantis. Now, the tough part is so many of these righties are really struggling right now. I mean, Zach Watson's on his hair. But after that, you got guys like Saul Garza, Hal Hughes, Brant Broussard, Brock Mathis. Just, all these guys that they especially guys like Garza and Mathis, they expected, a little more out of, and now all of a sudden the bottom of your lineup just kind of turned into a little, a little desert sometimes offensively. So yeah. I think that's definitely concerning, and they're not denying that. And I think the toughest part of that is it's not like there's really some huge fix that can come. I think guys like Hughes and Broussard are probably never going to be great hitters. I think they, Mathis, I'm not going to make a full verdict yet, but I doubt he's ever going to become some great hitter. Garza's really the only one that you're thinking, okay, hopefully he can put it together because he does have so much potential. But, yeah, no, it's a concern, but I do think you got to give some credit to just a heck of a weekend from that Georgia staff.
maybe Garza becomes a better hitter as he plays more, gets more involved in the game? Is it, you think catching every day will help him hitting, or is that just a pipe dream?
It's definitely a hope. I mean, that's definitely a thing that, you know, that he's been saying, that the staff has been saying. They really do. And when you hear them explain it, it makes sense that, I mean, you know, Garza's even admitted that, hey, when you're just sitting there as a DH, you know, in the dugout in between innings and you're not hitting great, all of a sudden that's all you're thinking about. You know, you're not in the flow of a game. You're not seeing that many pitches. You were just sitting there thinking about hitting. And that's not necessarily healthy either. So I think the hope is, one, okay, now you're in the flow of the game. You're seeing more pitches all the time as a catcher, and your mind's kind of off it. So that's the hope. I mean, I don't know if that's enough to make a drastic difference, but I could definitely see it maybe kickstarting something. But the tough part there is also, I mean, at least as of right this second, he's not as good of a catcher as Brock Mathis is. I mean, right. I think he might have more talent as a catcher. I think he's got a lot of ability, but he's obviously just kind of easing his way back. So it's not like you can just be like, hey, we're going to commit to the guards that catcher to get his back going, because Brock Mathis is a pretty good plus defensively.
I've got to believe Brody Miller, NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune, for a team that has so many left-handed batters, they got no left-handed pitchers, and I got a funny feeling they're going to see a lot of left-handed pitchers coming up in the SEC, and lefty against lefty, that seems to favor the lefty on the mound rather than the lefty with the bat in his hand.
You're absolutely right, and that's something Paul Bonnet brought up yesterday. He was saying this is when it's going to really hit us most, is that, you know, yeah, because this is when you need those right-handed hitters. You need those right-handed hitters to step up against lefties. And yeah, I guess you can make a devil's advocate argument that, hey, these righties are facing righties more often, so that might hurt them. But, I mean, we're pretty far into the season. I think to some extent you kind of just are what you are. But yeah, no, so I think they're going to face at least one. They're definitely going to face a left-handed pitcher on Thursday, and I'm pretty sure they're going to face seven of the next nine SEC games. They're going to be facing left-handed starting pitchers. So yeah, this is really going to be the time where this could really haunt them. And, you know, and this is, it's at least worth mentioning that, you know, at least some of those lefties have histories of hitting solid against lefties. You know, Antoine Duplantis is a better record against lefties than he does righties, and Josh Smith is just a really disciplined hitter, so he'll probably be okay. Yeah, and Chris Reed, same thing. I think maybe Cabrera, guys like that, or maybe a young guy like Kay Beloso, they struggle a bit more against lefties. But at least that's one tiny little silver lining there.
I got you. Brody Miller, NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune. Again, LSU versus McNeese, 6:30, first pitch right here, 103.7 the game. Zach Hess, Cole Henry, I don't think there's any question or doubt now that there's your Friday-Saturday guy. Or Thursday, Friday in Starkville. What's the latest on Justin Hill? Well, he came out so good, and then all of a sudden the sore arm. What's his latest status?
Yeah, the latest is that. I mean, they had an MRI this weekend, and you know the results are still good. There's still no like major issue going on there. So they're leaving the weekend optimistic in that sense. And you know he's doing, you know, pre-throwing exercises. I believe as of Thursday we were told he had thrown twice, but then again he had an MRI this weekend, which means probably there was another hiccup. But yeah, so he is easing his way back, and that's the thing. They're pretty confident there is no like glaring major issue, so they're just letting his arm kind of slowly return, and it's frustrating. And I think they'll all tell you they're pretty befuddled by just kind of this whole stretch of injuries, especially his in particular. But at least they're optimistic they could possibly get him back sometime.
Brody, I need you to do a story on this somehow, some way. There's got to be something going on year after year. There are more LSU pitchers on the shelf than in a uniform being able to play. It seems like how many injured pitchers do they have this year? It's got to be five, six, seven.
I believe it's eight.
Eight. I mean, it's even worse. It's year after. I wonder what their approach is on this thing, because it's got to change. There are too many kids coming up with sore arms or this, that, and the other. I don't know what approach they're taking or what, but there's something amiss for it to happen again and again and again.
Yeah, and you're right. And here's what I would say, though. I mean, one, I think this is a little bit something across all of baseball. Two, I think I mean, I don't think it has been this bad ever before. I mean, like last year, I think when you – correct me if I'm wrong, there were pretty much two guys out all year. It was just – they just happened to be two pretty important guys in Eric Walker and Nick Storrs. But it wasn't like – unless I'm wrong, I could be missing some. But I feel like there weren't that many arms out last year. And I mean, it's worse than it's ever been this year. That much, I think, is pretty clear. Now, the answers to that – no, but I'm not denying your point. Your point is there's definitely something going on, and it's something that I think – you know, you talk to anyone around baseball, and also to tell you, I am working on it. I'm trying to figure out answers
there
myself, and trying to get a story on it. But yeah, I just think that it's a very complicated problem. You know, sometimes you hear it has to do with travel ball. Sometimes it's that transition from going to high school to college. It's a different kind of arm stress. I think there's also something that maybe just the evolution of some of these arms, that they're becoming so dominant as time goes on that, like, and that's not the arm motion you're supposed to have, like, naturally. So, and then that creates problems. I think it's just such a complex issue that everybody in baseball is trying to figure out.
Brody Miller, well said. NOLA.com, the Times Picayune. Is Devin Fontenot the new closer?
I think we'll see him experimented more a little bit with that role. You know, I don't think there's any scenario in which Pulmonary is ready to give up on Todd Peterson. But, yeah, I mean, it's obviously very telling that, you know, in that Friday night spot, they went to Devin Fontenot because he was the trustworthy arm. And they kind of did it again on Sunday, you know, when it's tight spot, they went to him. So, yeah, I definitely think right now, you know, Paul's at least kind of taking a step back and saying, okay, let's not overthink these defined roles. Let's just go with the guy who we trust to get those three outs. But I still think we're going to see a mix and match of both. And it's going to be a lot of situational stuff because – I'm not saying what I think, is more just what, you know, Mineri thinks, and he's very staying true to the point that, you know, like, he's like, hey, I can't show you a single one of these games where Todd has looked bad. It's been a lot of, hey, it's a really nice pitch and a guy drove it, or hey, this guy with this ball was just weirdly slapped in the wrong place. And I think that's his thing. It's you obviously have to react a little bit when it's been, you know, four times and six or seven outings. Yeah, you have to react. But it's not like it's some major thing because he does still have such good stuff. So I think – but overall answer, yeah, I think we will see Fontenot in those spots a little bit more as time goes on.
Brody Miller, NOLA.com, the Times Picayune, LSU McNeese State tonight at the box, 6:30 first pitch, and then LSU heads off to Starkville for a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. What did you see different? What was it that all of a sudden happened to Zach Hess in Athens? He was brilliant, a one-zip shutout. What happened there?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I would also say that last week against Kentucky, he walked six guys, but he was also, like, I think he gave up, what, one or two, just a few hits against Kentucky. So he's been pretty dominant 2 weeks in a row. But, yeah, I think here's what I would say it is. I think you're going to put a small percentage of it on the fact that he's 100% now. Because I think there's something – I wouldn't put a massive percentage on it, but I think there's something to – he had that little groin issue that, you know, kept him out for, you know, he wasn't able to throw for 2 or 3 weeks in January, February, and then he's behind schedule when the season starts, and then he just kind of, you know, he's fine to pitch, he's okay, but he's not quite the rhythm he wants to be. So that happens, and then because of that groin issue, he's struggling, but also he had that, his leg is his biggest problem, and it's not a huge one, but it's his biggest thing, is he doesn't always repeat his delivery all the time. And that's something, you know, scouts will tell you, a lot of people will tell you, he needs to work on always having the same delivery. So I think you combine that groin problem with that, and so all of a sudden his leg kick was changing, things like that. And then for two starts, once he kind of got his leg kick back to where it was, he looked pretty darn good. Uh-huh. And then he looked great for two innings against Texas, and then he took a line drive to the arm. And at some point, you have to just kind of start feeling bad for him. It's just like, God, it's like he might not be ready, or he's really good, and we don't know, because each time there's one little thing that just keeps pushing this conversation a week further. So I think my answer to that would be, I think he might just be 100% finally, and finally, like, getting that delivery down, and he just looks like the pitcher that Pulmonary said he could be.
And he got ahead in the count, right? I mean, he's pitching with the advantage to him. He's not behind the count 2-1, 3-1, stuff like that, where he's got to pipe one down the middle. And that's such a key to any pitcher.
Absolutely, and you're right. I think that's something that I don't have a great answer for you about what would have made the difference between Kentucky and Georgia there, because you're right, that is the biggest difference. And you know, I haven't had a chance to talk to him about that yet, but that was a huge piece of this, and I'd be curious to hear what he thinks the answer is there.
How do you feel about this team? I mean, you know, nobody's got a tougher schedule than at Georgia, followed by at Mississippi State. Nobody has so they're getting these out of the way early. They haven't had much success on the road. What do you feel? How do you feel about this club, and how do they feel about themselves?
Yeah, so it's a great question, because now we finally at least have enough of sample size to really start having these conversations. I would go back to it's hard to break this down, because it's like we went into the season with all these kind of narratives of what we thought this team would be, right? We thought it was going to be this just dominant pitching staff and an above average lineup. And then that narrative changed so fast in the season that it became, hey, pretty good lineup and, you know, kind of messy pitching staff. And it's like we kind of forgot what we thought it was at the beginning of the season. And I still feel pretty confident in this pitching staff, and this lineup has just kind of returned to what I always kind of thought it was, which is a solid lineup, but not a dominant one. So I think the key to the season is going to basically just come down to, can you get those arms healthy? Because the arms that are healthy, in my personal opinion, are returning to what they're supposed to be. And you're seeing those, like you said, the Hesses, the Henrys, the, you know, Walker slowly getting back, your Fontenots, your guys like that. Even Matthew Betts looks solid, in my opinion. I mean, you just, Mikhail Hilliard, you know, I think these guys are getting back to what they're supposed to be, and there's potential for that pitching staff. But if you don't have the arms they hope they have back soon, then obviously this conversation involved is pretty much a moot point. So where I stand on this team is I no longer think this team, you know, right now as it stands, is going to be a top five team. But I think if they can get that pitching staff healthy, yeah, they definitely still have a chance to be a College World Series team, and I definitely wouldn't be surprised if they went on a run in Omaha. But that's just such a huge if, because if not, yeah, I think this team is what it is. The 10-15 team in the country, which is good, but not good enough for LSU standards.
That lineup doesn't scare me. I'm not fearful of any one hitter. You know what I mean?
Absolutely agreed. I'm scared. If I'm a pitcher, I'm probably just scared of that 1-5, because it's five just, you know, veteran guys who know what they're doing. But, yeah, I'm definitely not frightened.
Yeah, okay. All right. So tonight, give me the over-under on how many pitchers pitch for LSU against McNeese.
Absolutely. I will go – I think we get two innings out of Hill. I'll go 6.5 pitches.
6.5. Okay. Got to save them for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, so everybody gets a little bit of piece of the pie, and we'll go from there. McNeese, not bad, but you got to win these games. You know what I mean? I mean, you can't be fooling around. So we'll see. It's a tough deal to juggle for a manager. So we'll see. But you'll be there. We'd love to get a report from you from Starkville, if you don't mind. So stay tuned. We'll be leaning on you.
Absolutely. Anytime. You know that.
Okay, buddy. Thank you, Brody. Greatly appreciate it. Brody Miller, NOLA.com. Time speaking you, talking LSU baseball. We'll be back to wrap up hour number one next here on the Jordy Helpert Show and Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com.
Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson, Cecilia Exit in Brobridge, everything for your travel needs. Kids getting off of school in just a minute, and you're heading toward the I-10 at the Henderson, Cecilia Exit in Brobridge. Stop off. Get them a snack. Get them some energy as they get ready to do their homework or their extracurricular activity. They'll find everything there. It'll be great. It'll be great. Cleanest restrooms you'll see anywhere. Every snack and beverage imaginable. And that true soul food deli tucked away in the corner. It's got everything. Cheeseburgers, catfish, boudin, whatever you want. They've got it cooked, fresh to order, and ready to go. You can dine in or get in the car and take it with you. So whether you're going 550 or 500 miles, DC's Little Capital Exxon has everything for you. 16 teams left in the NCAA basketball tournament, 4 from the SEC. Auburn takes on North Carolina. Kentucky takes on Houston. Tennessee takes on Purdue. And, of course, LSU versus Michigan State. Is it fathomable or unfathomable that all four have a realistic shot of advancing to a potential regional final, the Elite Eight. It would mark the first time in SEC history that it put four teams in the Elite Eight. But consider that the conference already clinched the highest number of Sweet 16 teams since 1996. What an exclamation point that would put on an historic year for hoops in the football conference known as the SEC. Of those four, let's see. Auburn versus North Carolina. North Carolina's bigger, longer, but Auburn's got that quality, man. They can shoot you out of a game. Houston and Kentucky. Is P.J. Washington going to play? Houston, very elite defensively. They've got good athletes, but I like Kentucky's chances. Tennessee and Purdue. Purdue is long. They have size. They have an absolute tremendous score in Carson Edwards. And if he gets rolling, look out. He's had six games of 30-plus points this year. He's averaged seven made three-pointers in those games. Seven. So we'll see. And then, of course, LSU versus Michigan State. We'll get more into that one in hour number two for sure. You know, you saw the blueprint of how Maryland got back in the game. They put up that 3-2 zone or a 1-2-2. And LSU struggled, 7 of 29 from the field against Maryland's zone. But Michigan State doesn't play zone, or at least they haven't this year. A total of, from our good friend Cody Worsham, who has the time to look all this stuff up, has had five possessions of zone defense all year, just five. That does not mean that with all the time that Michigan State's had to prepare for this Friday game, 6:09 on 103.7 the game, pregame show 5:30. Doesn't mean he doesn't have time to put in a zone. Maybe throw it out there, and it will be incumbent upon Waters and Mays and Smart and Darius Days and Naz Reid to hit those shots. Cavell Bigby-Williams didn't go outside to shoot it, and Emmett Williams didn't go outside to shoot it. So they're going to have to find some outside shooting. I tell you what they needed. What they need is a Dwayne Scales. Yeah, Dwayne Scales from back in the day. And we're going to talk with Dwayne Scales in hour number two about his time at LSU, his short time in the NBA, and life after basketball. So we look forward to a nice conversation with my former teammate. I came in, I was a sophomore when he came in as a freshman. And that boy could play some ball. Yep. All right, hour number one is in the books. Coming up, hour number two, we always start things off with hot topics. So stick around. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Hour number two, straight ahead.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans.
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Hour number two of two, and away we go. How's your Tuesday? Man, look at the weather outside. It's got to be great. It is March 26th. Yes. It is the last Tuesday in the month of March as LSU gets ready to head up to our nation's capital for that Friday showdown against the Michigan State Spartans. Yes, indeed. Saints got their tight end in Jared Cook. LSU baseball here on 103.7 The Game tonight. McNeese State, the Cowboys come to Baton Rouge. Alec Box Stadium, Skip Bertman Field, 6:30, first pitch, pregame show, 6 o'clock. So A lot on the plate. We'll talk with a former teammate of mine in this hour. A tremendous basketball player. My goodness gracious. Back in the day now, some of you may not remember him, but those in my generation and a little bit beyond will certainly remember Dwayne the Astronaut Scales. What a player. What a player. But we start off hour number two every day with my good friend, producer extraordinaire, Clint Domain, as we take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. I have no idea what it's going to be today, but we'll find out as CD hits that button.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
Disclaimer, Clint and I never talk about this. We have never discussed this. I like it that way because I like to be on my toes and ready, and he'll throw a plethora of things at me, and we'll see how we handle it today. So, Clint, happy Tuesday, my friend.
Happy Tuesday, Jordy. And I saw the Saints, they were shopping recently. They went to Jared and cooked up a solid deal and got one of the best tight ends to sign on the dotted line today. It took like 6 months, it feels like.
But finally,
Jared Cook, a New Orleans Saint. How big is that to have that alongside a guy like Mike Thomas? That's just more and more toys for Drew Brees to play with.
Well, he was a Pro Bowler last year. He's a veteran. He's been around the block. But he had his best season as a Raider, and he gets to catch passes from Drew Brees. And I know Sean Payton has a plan in place for how they want to utilize him. Said it earlier in hour number one, I think he's the best catching tight end the Saints have had since Jimmy Graham. So the more weapons, the better. Super Bowl, baby, let's go.
Exactly. That might be the final piece to Drew Brees' proverbial infinity gauntlet for those who are fans of the Avengers. But we did not get to talk about this yesterday.
I'm one of those. Nice. I'm a fan. Yeah.
All right, Jordan, you're bringing that up. Might as well segue. I was going to get to some college basketball, but I saw this pop up. The Avengers Endgame, 3 hours and 2 minutes, Jordy.
Oh,
are you going to be sitting there for the entire 3 hours and 2 minutes, or would you be down for an intermission in between? Because that's been something that's been bantied about for weeks.
Yes. Intermission, absolutely. Let me get a refill on the jumbo popcorn, refill on the large Diet Coke, and the obvious bathroom break. Yes.
I definitely would have to agree with you. And less trailers, please, because I feel like that's one of the biggest things I've had to complain about going to the movies lately has been too many trailers, Jordy. At least like 15 minutes worth of them.
The trailers, all right, but back in the day now, before you were, you know, even a vision in your parents' mind, we used to have cartoons being played before shows, and every movie had an intermission. Why? Movie theaters are smart. They want to sell more popcorn, more stuff. Come on, let's get with it.
I'm amazed they haven't done it yet, Jordy. But now I'm gonna get back to what I was going to talk about, because I think it's just amazing what's going to be going on with the Tulane Green Wave, Jordy. We did not get to talk about it on Monday.
Yes.
Why not talk about it? Because the topic's still hot, because Ron Hunter, former Georgia State Panthers head coach, he wanted to be announced earlier today and introduced as the Green Wave's new basketball coach. Can he get this program out of the proverbial doldrums and into contention in what looks to be a pretty competitive AAC with the way Houston has been and UCF?
And don't forget, Wichita State's always been good. That's a great basketball conference, no question about it. Ron Hunter's a guy that coached on one leg, right? Coached his son in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, and fell
out of the chair. Yeah, and was hopping around. And good coach. Look, they made a mistake in hiring Mike Dunleavy. That was a friend of the athletic director. He had no business being in college basketball. That's an NBA coach. He had no concept of what recruiting was, and he didn't recruit. They got no players, and they were 0-for in conference play this season. So Ron Hunter knows what recruiting's all about. He's got ties to the Atlanta area, the Georgia area. Tulane has a lot to offer academically. They have a lot to offer with the city of New Orleans. What they don't have to offer is a really good gymnasium. That little Fogelman Arena is the same as it was when I played high school games in there. So you can only do so much, but they can only get better, right? I mean, you don't win one game in your conference. So Mike Dunleavy didn't win a game. He's out. Bryce Drew didn't win a game at Vanderbilt. He's out. Tim Miles went to the tournament at Nebraska in 14, hadn't been back since. He's out. So lots of openings coming your way. We're just kind of curious to see what's going to be happening with my school down the road. We'll
exactly.
See.
Like I said, that's something we'll talk about in the not-too-distant future. I feel like we're going to be talking about that when we get into the month of June or July, possibly. But I want to wind up talking about, sticking with the conversation, Ron Hunter, again, former Georgia State head coach. You got to be thinking, Bob Marlin's going to be pretty excited about this right about now, because Georgia State has been a thorn in the side of the Cajuns,
yes,
and also the entire Sun Belt Conference. It's a lot like what we're seeing in football, where a lot of the top dogs in terms of coaches, they're bouncing out to go get these big-time jobs. I think that winds up making things a lot more entertaining in the Sun Belt Conference now.
Yeah, you get rid of a good coach. Hopefully Georgia State gets a lesser commodity, and that improves everybody's chances. So it's all about getting players and getting them the right way. You never hear of these infractions in the mid-major schools. They do it the right way. Not that I know of, except, you know, back in the day when it was Southwest Louisiana, that was a problem with my boy Ebron and Bo Lamar. But anyway, that's another story that we've already rehashed time and time again.
Yep.
But look, Bob's a great coach. He goes and gets players. He does it the right way. They lost their key star this season early. They never were able to recover. Next year's a new year. They'll be fine.
All right, Jordy, hopping over to one of the biggest names in college basketball is Zion Williamson, without a doubt. And I can't believe we haven't talked about this before, is everybody, they're talking about him, but it's more about the biggest concern is what position could he play in the NBA when he goes to the association. A lot of people are saying they could wind up changing which way he winds up going, but does it really matter where you play in this modern age of basketball where it's positionless? Sure, you want to call him a 3 or a 4, but we all know, like, it don't matter anymore what kind of the position is in 2019.
You know what they want to call him? A New Orleans Pelican. That's what they want to call him.
Yes.
I don't care. You can call him whatever you want. A 1, a 2, a 3, a 4, a 5. It don't matter. It doesn't. Just put him on the court and let him go. Just let him go. And look, I'm telling you, it's going to be even better for him in the NBA. The lane is wider. The game is more up and down. It's more free-flowing. He's going to be ridiculous in the NBA. You ain't seen nothing yet. So I want to call him a Pelican. The heck with the what position? Just call him a pelican.
I love it, Jordy. I absolutely love it. And hey, if you can wind up getting that number one pick, that winds up looming large. But man, my thing is, Jordy, I would love to get Zion Williamson and try and get the number one pick, because it's gonna be tough to get it in the lottery. But I would honestly be trying to trade as well. Maybe on the night of the NBA draft, trade to up to number two. Because a lot of people are saying a guy that we talked about a lot on Friday, Ja Morant, is being a potential number two pick. I'd trade up to there in a heartbeat to get Ja Morant based on what I see from him.
Here's what I do. Who's got the number one pick?
Probably the Cavaliers.
Let's say it's the Cavs. Say it's the Knicks. Whoever it may be. Hey, dude, give you Anthony Davis for the pick, and give me another player, and we got a deal. Boom. There you go.
Yeah.
Simple.
Simple as that, Jordy. And last one, my goodness, the world of UFC just got a earthquake announcement last night. Conor McGregor retiring
from
MMA.
You don't believe that, do you?
I think that a lot of things, especially the stuff that's come out in the last hour or so about reported assault rumors coming out back in December, that could wind up looming large about his decision to hang it up. And also, that Proper 12 apparently is doing pretty darn good.
So if he's accused of that, they'll settle something out of court, which means he's going to have to make more money. He's done this once before, and he's come out of retirement. Let me get bigger odds. Who stays in retirement longer? Is it Conor McGregor or Gronk? Who stays in retirement longer?
Ah, man, I'd probably wind up going Gronk, just because I feel like Gronk's got way more money. Because I feel like, I'm probably wrong about this, but I remember reading this yesterday, was that Gronk actually had mainly spent a lot of his money in terms of endorsements. So he hadn't really touched his contract money yet. So he's got a whole lot to kind of, he doesn't have to worry about a thing, basically. He could be partying on boats, taking his shirt off at bogeys and BR and having a whole lot of fun, you know?
weren't they negotiating a new contract or something? And then all of a sudden he does. This is all a negotiation ploy because doesn't I mean Conor McGregor has all the power. That organization needs him more than he needs them. I promise you, he ain't going for long. He'll be back. He likes the limelight. He likes the money.
Yeah.
And yes, I know he likes his scotch.
Proper 12.
Proper 12. I don't drink scotch, so I don't know anything about it. But regardless, he'll be back. And wouldn't it be funny? Can Gronk sit out the whole year and come back just for the playoffs? Can he do that for the Patriots?
I'm sure he would. I mean, I think that's a big reason why the Patriots weren't really trying to go after Jared Cook. And that was why they're, you know what, Gronk, just sit out the whole season, and then we'll sign you like week 16 and keep you under the wire for a little bit.
I just want him to be part of the Sly Stallone movie, The Untouchables. Let's do
the
another
Expendables.
Thank you, not The Untouchables. That's Kevin Costner and all that. Yeah, The Expendables. Thank you. Let's do Expendables 4, 5, 6, and 7, and bring all those action heroes back with the new guy. They brought Ronda Rousey in, so why not bring Gronk? He'd be menacing in that. He'd be menacing. He'd be great. I'm all for it. All right, just a thought. Untouchables. What am I talking about? See, I need an intermission during movies so I can get more Reese's Pieces and more popcorn, more Diet Coke, and the proverbial bathroom break, and then let's go watch the second half of the movie. Bring back the good old days. Movie theaters, you're missing out because we'll buy more stuff. We will, but lower your prices a little bit. My God, the cost of popcorn and a drink. Holy Toledo. All right, enough of that. There's your Hot Topics for the day, brought to you by the best hot sauce every day, and that is Cajun Chef Hot Sauce. My great people, the Biard family, right there in St. Martinville, year after year, day after day, hour after hour, putting out the best hot sauce you can ever imagine, because they only use the best for the best, best spices, best peppers, put it all together, there's your Cajun Chef Hot Sauce. I have a small bottle everywhere I go. I put it on my eggs in the morning. Boy, does it taste better. It's just the best. Try it. You'll love it. Cajun Chef, the best in the business. All right, time out on the floor. When we come back, we'll delve a little deeper. LSU, Michigan State. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Helfrich Show on 103.7 The Game.
Minutes after the hour, welcome back, boys and girls. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show, brought to you by Hooters. Hooters just makes you happy. You got to go in and see the new and improved, completely renovated shop on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway. The food is the same. It's great. But, boy, it's cleaner. It's neater. It's brighter. They got all the flat-screen TVs you could ever imagine. So, March Madness, Hooters is the place to be. No ifs, ands, buts about it. None. So we're down to 16 teams, right? First 2 days are crazy. Big shots, just sometimes the big shots get beat. But 14 of the Sweet 16 teams now are from Power 5 conferences. The top 14 teams in the KenPom rankings advanced. All four number one seeds advanced. All four number two seeds advanced. All four number three seeds advanced. And two number four seeds are still alive. You've got a five seed and one double-digit seed, a 12-er. So five ACC teams advanced. Four SEC teams advanced. Three from the Big Ten. One Big 12. One Pac-12. And then you've got the two non-power fivers, Houston and number one-seeded Gonzaga, that advanced. Anything can happen in these. And there's no question. Duke is still the prohibitive favorite in this thing. And they are in LSU's side of the bracket. So LSU's got the most difficult task, I think, of the SEC teams remaining with Michigan State, and if they're fortunate enough to win that one, unless something catastrophic happens, the Duke Blue Devils. Michigan State shouldn't be as good as they are right now, in my opinion. They've had a lot of injuries. They lost one of their top players in Josh Langford. But they're still among some of the few teams that are capable of winning the whole thing. Tom Izzo, he's just a great coach, and he has done a masterful job with this year's group of Spartans. I don't think it's nearly as talented as some of his prior Final Four teams. He just wills them. His mere persona wills them. Cassius Winston is maybe the best passing point guard still in the tournament, and he is the catalyst. He runs the show. But the keys to this team are their wing players, Kenny Goins and Xavier Tillman. They've been playing at an extremely high level, knocking down shots left and right. If they continue to play that way, Michigan State's going to be tough to beat. They're only one of five teams that are all still alive in the Sweet 16 that are in the top 11 in both adjusted offensive and adjusted defensive efficiency. They're good. Now, LSU's talented. LSU's athletic. They've got shot makers in Skylar Mays and Tremont Waters, who are both shot makers and playmakers. LSU's good. No question. Where I see a flaw in LSU right here, right now, they go to the offensive glass tremendously well. One of the best in the country at going to the offensive glass. For some reason, they're not very good on the defensive boards. Their initial defense is very good, but they're vulnerable on the defensive glass. And Michigan State, if you followed them under Tom Izzo, they are notoriously good at going to the boards. Physical, bump you, bang you, and they go get it. The key thing to watch out for in this game is, can LSU turn Michigan State over? Can they turn them over? Now, LSU struggled against the zone. They struggled on that rim in Jacksonville, on that goal in Jacksonville in both games. So maybe it was the backdrop. Maybe it was something. And all the teams seem to struggle on that one end in Jacksonville. They're going to an NBA arena now in D.C. That's not going to be an issue. This is where the Wizards play. I've been there many, many, many a time. It's a great arena for basketball. Great sight lines. And I saw Michael Jordan drop 45 in there when he was ending his career with the Wizards. Saw him drop 45. Yeah, good. So you know this is when you get to the, you're going to be looking on the sidelines and you're going to say, well, advantage Michigan State. Izzo's a Hall of Famer. Tony Benford, okay. So advantage there. Cassius Winston, really good. Tremont Waters, really good. That's a match. I don't know if they're going to guard one another. I don't know how LSU's going to handle that, because you can ill afford to get Waters in foul trouble. So maybe Skylar Mays opens up on him. I don't know. We'll see what happens along those lines. But LSU's got to be able to turn Michigan State over and get some easy transition buckets. It's going to be very difficult if it's a half-court game, because State's really good defensively. They've got interchangeable people, which means anytime you switch, they can. Anytime you screen, they can switch on those screens, and it's going to be difficult. So LSU's going to have to make it a 94-foot game, get it up and down the floor, and that means you're going to have to go to your bench, which is really good. Smart, Williams, Days, very, very good. They're going to have to play a valuable role in this thing. They were key in the win over Maryland. Bench outscored Maryland. They doubled them up. And so the bench is very important. Got to keep your bigs in any game out of foul trouble. And Michigan State is going to get under their skin. They're very aggressive, very physical. They go to the boards with reckless abandon. So it's going to be paramount that Naz Reid and Cabell Bigby Williams don't get early fouls. Very, very significant. So that's just a brief little look into this ball game. We'll continue throughout the course of the week as we get more Michigan State followers or people that cover them on the program. I'm efforting. I put out a call to Magic. I did. Hadn't heard back yet, but we'll be relentless. We'll stay after it until it doesn't happen. But I got a feeling it will. So stay with us on that one. All right, coming up. Boy, what a player. The astronaut, Dwayne Scales, next.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
And welcome back as we continue this March Madness of the NCAA basketball tournament and LSU's run now to the Sweet 16, where they will take on Michigan State this Friday, 6 o'clock tip from our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. We continue to bring back former players sharing their experiences in the tournament, and I'm so excited to bring the most talented player I personally have ever played with. He had it all. Size, range, could jump out the gym. He could do it all. He was nicknamed affectionately the astronaut. Everybody that followed LSU basketball back in the 70s and 80s knows exactly who I'm talking about, and that is from Dallas, Texas, Dwayne Scales. It has been so long. It has been way too long, my friend. Welcome. And welcome back to Tiger Town, buddy. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Man,
great to be here.
Well, I tell you what, I've had Howard Carter on, and Ethan Martin, and Rudy Macklin, and others, and others, and others, and they all agree, man, you had it. You had the game. You did it all. You could shoot from 30. You could put your elbow over the rim. Man, you had it all, buddy. You were something else.
Well, thanks for the compliment. I mean, those were the good old days. I mean, I was young then. I'm rather a different age now, let's say. And yeah, those were good times.
What took you from Dallas, Texas? How did you come all the way to Baton Rouge? What was the appeal?
You know what I was attracted to when I was being recruited by LSU and Del Brown? I love that campus. It is beautiful. I mean, yeah. You could study out by the water, and you know the quadrangle is always good to walk through. And
yeah.
I really, it was a lot of things that drew my attention. And besides, I didn't want to go too far away from home, and that was an ideal spot for me to be. So I chose LSU.
That was a pretty good recruiting class. Yourself and Ethan Martin and Willie Sims. That was quite a triumvirate there.
Yeah, when we came in, the team was needing a boost, and they were already good. We just made them better, and we did our thing when we were there. It's been quite some time, but it was a whole lot of fun, and I just enjoyed being there, being a part of it.
Yeah, you know, everything wasn't peaches and cream. You know, there were times, and I remember after an SEC tournament game against Kentucky, Coach Brown had to suspend you, and I know that hurt. What did you learn from that, and what did you take away from that?
Well, he made a decision, not me. So
yeah.
I guess a valuable lesson is just stay in your lane. I mean, that's pretty much, you know, mm-hmm. what I was trying to do, and Coach Brown felt like there was something other than what was going on, so he suspended me. So it hurt, and I had to sit in the dorm room and watch the games on TV. I was just I felt like I let a lot of people down. And I promised myself the year, the next year, the following year that I come back, that I would give it all I had. And I did. And
you did. It
didn't really work all the way out the way I wanted it to. But, you know, I say it now, God has a plan for me. He had
Amen.
A plan for me.
Amen. Yeah. You certainly made it pay off. There were so many great games you had, but I just remember that SEC basketball tournament championship game against Kentucky in Birmingham. You were named the tournament most valuable player, and you just went off against Kentucky. Was that your most memorable moment?
I always loved playing against Kentucky because I didn't like Kentucky. They were always the front runners. And I felt like we were better. I felt like that we had just as much talent as they did, and I wanted to kick their butts. And, you know, every time we played them, I mean, it was just, you know, because I don't know. I mean, we didn't get the publicity or the standings like they did. And, of course, you know, we upset them and put them in their place. We made those games when I was there. We made those games rivalries, and the reason being is because we were kicking their butts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Dwayne Scales. Did you mind the nickname, the astronaut? By the way,
no, I love that. I mean, I had to be something. I had to be something. I loved it. I mean, it was just great. I don't know. By me being 6'9", most 6'9" guys, now back then, nowadays they jump out of the gym. But then, if you were 6'9", I mean, if you could jump over, you could really do some things. So
I enjoyed that name.
I got people around here still calling me astronaut.
Absolutely.
They remember me from that, you know, in my college days.
Yeah, absolutely. What sets you apart, not only could you jump, but at 6'9", if we had the three-point line back then when we were playing, you and I would have gone crazy. Because you could rise up from 30.
Yeah, you're sure right, Jordy. You're right. But I guess the game's changed. And I wish we had that opportunity to play with a three-point line. Yeah. I think our stats would look a little. We could probably stuff our stats a little bit more.
Heaven forbid that and a shot clock like they have now, because we had neither one of them. Could you imagine the players we had, the teams we were on with a shot clock and a 3-point line? That'd have been dangerous.
Man, wow. Well, I mean, it's coulda, shoulda, woulda, but you know, it is. It is what it is now. So, but being an LSU Tiger, it's probably one of my greatest experiences as a basketball player.
Yeah.
Coming up through high school and whatnot, and going to a major university, that was one of my goals, was to try to go to college and, you know, obtain an education and and try to do the right things. And I mean, you know, it turned out all right. I wake up every morning. I thank God for, you know, waking me up, and I'm happy. I'm thankful, you know. So I'm still walking, breathing, and eating,
and
put on a little weight. But you know how it is.
I do. Dwayne Scales, kind enough to join us. Let's talk about your NBA career. You were drafted by the New York Knicks. How did that go for you? What was that like?
Well, it was okay, I guess. I mean, I was a happy player. I liked to have fun. I wasn't as serious. But once you get in the professional league, it changes. Everything changed for me. You know, it was some things that I didn't know about, and there were some things that I could not do. It just wasn't professional. So I got the opportunity to start maybe 5 or 6 games, I think. And that's when I said, you know what, Dwayne, I don't think this was a good decision. I think you really wasn't ready. I should have stayed one more year in college. And that would have helped me. You know, that would have helped me. I probably would have been retiring along with Magic and Bird and all them guys.
Yeah.
But, again, you know, I don't have any ill feelings about
right.
it. I mean,
right.
I did what I did, and I just want the people to know in Baton Rouge, when we did have the opportunity to go after a national championship, that I apologize and that I'm very, very sorry for that. But, again, that's in the past. And
that's right.
I'm looking forward to these new guys that they have out there now that's playing. They're great. They really are great.
I was going to ask you about them. What do you think about this current team?
Well, I like them. I don't think any other team that I've watched so far has – the type of point guards that we have. I like the kid Waters and Mays. I like both of those guys. And Reed in the middle, he's tough too. He's kind of like a enforcer, like a Greg Cook was. Remember Greg? He was an enforcer. And the offensive crashed the boards. I mean, they're everywhere, you know. And this coach that's filling in now, he's doing a great job with him. I mean, I got to give him a lot of credit. I mean, it's hard to fill those shoes and then make it to the Sweet 16.
Dwayne Scales, the astronaut from Dallas, Texas to LSU and now living in Dallas. Life after basketball. Tell me about it.
Well, it's life after basketball. I mean, you know, you pick up all the pieces and you got to keep living. And that's what I'm doing now. I'm disabled at this time. I've got what they call a cervical decompression of the spine. I've had surgery for that.
Ouch.
Bilateral hip replacements, all the running and jumping and falling, getting up and running. And I mean, it took its toll. So. But God has a plan for us all, and not only me, he has a plan for us all. So
yes.
I'm living my life as a disabled guy, and, I mean, I don't have any regrets. I mean, I wake up every morning with the same face I had on when I went to bed the night before, but I'm happy, man. I mean, I just recently got married. I've been married now for, not recently, but 6 years. It seems like it's recently.
Good thing. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Good for
you. Yeah,
all right, let me take you back.
Okay.
I remember the Kentucky game. I also remember playing Alabama in Tuscaloosa. Dwayne Scales stole the ball on the wing, left side, took off down the court, cocked it, rocked it from the free throw line, and threw it down, and all of us just stopped, and our jaws went down, our mouths opened, and we just went, oh, my God. You've got to remember that play. Tell me you remember that one.
I do. I'm looking at it right now. I'm looking at it right now. I got all kind of sports clippings and, you know, pictures and stuff up in my wall, and I'm looking at that. It got it three-dimensional, and it was somebody standing down there. He was trying to get in front of me, but I took out before he got there. But yeah, that was a great dunk. I shook the roof on that one.
You sure did, brother. People don't realize sometimes the games were a lot easier than practices. You remember the wars we used to get in practice?
Ooh, at the field house.
Yes.
Oh, boy. Yes, sir. Man. Wow. I remember a couple of times I come out of there with the cuts on my eyes. And,
that's right.
You know, we were not teammates then. No, because everybody had something to prove. I mean,
that's,
you know,
exactly right.
Competitive towards each other, and it was great. I loved that because I felt like it would, you know, help me in the games when it was time for us to play. If we play like that in the field house, hell, we could play like that in the game. So Yeah, it was great. We just had some great, great wars in that field house.
The fans loved you. Just take me back when those when the Assembly Center was packed to the rafters. I mean, we got to experience all that together. That was the fun part of it.
Oh yeah, I'd love to get a fast break and let Eden lead me a pass out there, or you. And go to the moon and come back down. And make the fans went crazy. They just were overwhelmed with you know our style of play. I mean, we were good. I mean, we were exceptionally good as college athletes and whatnot. And I'm pretty sure it's still the same now that you know the team is back winning again. I don't think they've been to a tournament since 1981. But
it's been a little bit after that, but they haven't been to look, they're making a great run. They're in the Sweet 16. They got a chance to win some more. We could have used you against Michigan State and Magic Johnson. That's when you had that unfortunate thing that happened, that Coach Brown made the decision on. We sure could have used you, brother.
I was sick. I was just sick. You know, that was the time, I think, when I don't know. They said that I was trying to impress an agent, or Andrew Benson was his name, and you know I was talking to an agent. I never talked to them. I talked to him. I spoke, and but trying to do other things and this and that. And Coach C suspended me again. And I mean, it would have definitely been a different ball game. I think my future would have been a whole lot better than me playing 2 years with the Knicks or what have you, but. Again, you know,
can't look back, right?
Yeah, it was an unfortunate thing, and I hurt for that. I think about that all the time. I say that could have been me, because I mean, you know, I could have played Magic. I could have played against a Larry Bird. I mean, I was the right size, you know.
Yeah, you were. Yeah, you were. So, well, look, we got to get you back to Baton Rouge sooner than later. Okay, it's been way too long. I know Coach Brown brought you back a while ago, but we got to get you back in town, man. Let's get the gang back together and have some fun. What do you say?
I say let's do it.
You got it. I'm going to be I'll organize that thing, all right? I'll be in touch. Man, okay. God bless you. God bless you. I wish you nothing but health and happiness and the astronaut forevermore, buddy. Thanks for the time.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
Take care. Bye. There he is, Dwayne. The astronaut scale, 6'9", could pull up from 30 and could go above the square when he lifted up to throw it down. An exceptional, exceptional talent. We'll be back to wrap things up here on the Jordy Hultberg Show.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
All right. Wrapping things up on a Tuesday. I'm going to tell you, man, Dwayne Scales was something. He was, how can I describe it? He was different. He was a rare breed now. He was, had a little Jekyll Hyde in him. But on the court, not a more talented guy ever at 6'9". I mean, he was something to behold out on the basketball court. He really, really, truly was. So I greatly appreciate his time. Hope you enjoyed it half as much as we did, and we'll continue. Tomorrow we'll bring the tree, Lionel Tree Green from New Iberia. What a tremendous player, tremendous leader, and an even better career after basketball. Lionel Tree Green will join us tomorrow as we continue, plus so much more. Let's do a little history lesson, because it kind of ties in with what's about to happen. This Friday, it was on this day, March 26th, the year 1979. Still to this day, the single most watched college basketball game in NCAA basketball history. Michigan State with Magic Johnson defeated Indiana State with Larry Bird 75-64 to win the 41st NCAA Men's Basketball Championship. And that started the rivalry that helped create so much interest in the NBA. The rivalry between Magic and Bird, the Lakers and the Celtics, and it all started back on this day, March 26th, the year 1979. All right, birthdays. Happy birthday to you if today is your special day. Shout out Charlie Hayes, Baton Rouge, 17 years old today. My boy, he's a heck of a young man. He really, truly is. All right, let's go down the list. Wow, Steven Tyler, 79 years old today. Happy 78th, one of my favorite actors, James Caan. Happy 74th, Diana Ross. Yes, indeed. All right, Kenny Chesney, 50 years old today. And two really good ones, one active, one retired. The active, Von Miller. Happy 29th birthday to the Denver Bronco. And who could ever forget Stockton to Malone, John Stockton, from Gonzaga to the Utah Jazz to the Hall of Fame. Happy 57th birthday to John Stockton. There you go. If it's your anniversary, happy anniversary. Hope you keep adding year after year after year to it. Don't forget, coming up next, join Ben Love, all right, and Bumper to Bumper Sports from the T-Mobile at I-49 Frontage Road and Sonia Road and see for yourself why T-Mobile has the happiest customers in wireless. Customers get discounts and gifts every Tuesday, so we'll see you there today. Special thanks to Luke Johnson, Brody Miller, and the astronaut Dwayne Scales. Don't forget LSU baseball today, 6 o'clock pregame show, 6:30 first pitch as they take on McNeese State. Tomorrow, Lionel Tree Green, Hump Day with Huguenin, Cody Worsham. We're talking hoops and everything else. So come on back, same time, 2 to 4 p.m., same great radio station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Thank you for listening to our partners that make it possible each and every day, to CD, the best producer out there. Until tomorrow, I'm Jordy Helpert. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.